from LiveVox Studios in Seattle, Washington. This is WebTalk Guys Radio at WebTalkGuys.com and now at WebTalkRadio.com. And thank you for listening today. And my name is Rob Greenley, and I'm joined by my sidekick, Dana, who's formerly known as WebGirl.
Used to be WebGirl. Now I'm just Dana. Thanks, Rob. This week, you're going to join us on a trip into the dark side of the web. We're going to rescue anyone who's trapped in the web of bad design.
Yes, and if you're a website visitor or a website developer, you want to be clear about what your site has to offer and a clear path to what your users are looking for. And the website is as important to your business as a telephone. We have with us today web usability pro Steve Krug, and he has plenty to say about web design.
If you're working on a site, you really want to figure out what this site is going to offer, what kinds of people are going to be coming here, and more importantly, what are they going to have in mind when they get here?
Rob, I've been rummaging through our digital email mailbag. I pulled out one I want to share with everyone. Rich Slott wrote, "Would you please discuss the merits of Vivissimo? It's a search engine I hadn't heard of, but Rob, you have."
Yes, they're a new search engine that offers search engine results based on clustering of results. So it helps you find more specifically what you're looking for when you do a search.
Rich went on to say that he was following our conversation with Dogpile.com a few weeks ago. He has been an ardent user of Dogpile and then became an avid user of Google like everyone else. He says he's now a fan of Vivissimo. He says, depending on the search, it's generally Google for quick looks and Vivissimo for an in-depth look. Thanks a lot, Rich. We appreciate your feedback, and we will hope to talk a little bit more about Vivissimo in the future.
Yes, thank you, Rich. We appreciate the emails, and please keep them coming. Send them to Dana at WebTalkGuys.com or send them to me at RobG@WebTalkGuys, and we want to hear from you. We also want to thank a few of our supporters of the show, and one of them is Compass Communications, a network and server colocation provider up in the Seattle area, and their website address is ccom.net. And we're also supported by MailWiper.com, who is a faithful supporter of the WebTalk Guys, and it's a great way to filter spam email from your inbox.
Our plan today, Rob, is to sort of dig into the specific do's and don'ts of website design. And it's not like Rob and I have some golden rule book that you have to follow and it's just cut and dried, but we've been designers ourselves since about 1996
mm-hmm.
or so.
School of hard knocks, I
yeah.
think.
We've learned a few tips and tricks and secrets that we'd be happy to share. And it's not like you're not going to recognize if you go to a bad website. If you can't find your way around that website, it feels a little hokey. You know it's a bad site.
And WebGirl and I have built bad sites, too. And
yeah.
We've made them better over time, so we've learned those lessons, too.
That's right. We've revamped them. And then Rob and I will also take a walk down the website hall of, well, not quite shame, maybe, but the hall of websites that suck.
There are a lot of them out there, but there's a lot that don't suck, too.
If you're listening to us at a computer right now, well, just get ready to type in those URLs that we'll be giving you, and you can be shocked right along with us at some really bad web design.
That's right. There's some basic things that we can look at out there help build better sites. But certainly one of the most overriding rule is that websites prove design without function is futile.
Oh, are you saying that you can make it look pretty, but if it doesn't function, forget about it?
Yeah, and if you don't do some of these basic things, you're going to frustrate your users beyond comprehension.
You're right. We've compiled some top tips, sort of the top 10 of usable website design. What's one of them, Rob?
Give complete contact information on your site. And a lot of sites don't do this.
You'd think that was kind of obvious.
Yeah. It actually goes beyond just your name and your
email
address. You really should put down your street address, especially if you're conducting e-commerce or you're selling things. You mm-hmm. should put down all your contact information, fax number, street number, mailing address, even if it's a P.O. box. I mean, that's okay, but you're better off actually not using a P.O. box on a website because that has a tendency to instill a little bit of distrust.
And for businesses, please, I can speak from experience here, don't forget to put a press contact email address, because marketing of your site is always a good thing.
And be sure to put your email address down there, not just a form that a person fills out and it goes to some anonymous place.
Rob, quickly give us a few more quick tips before we have to go to break.
Make navigation easy and consistent on your site.
I say get a good web designer. I know I kind of do this for a living as well, so certainly contact me at WebTalk Guys. But get a web designer as opposed to maybe a graphic designer or a brochure designer, because it's a whole different thing.
Well, it's difficult to find somebody that has both skills as a HTML as well as a graphic artist, but they are out there.
I think it's important to let people know, make your site 100% text compatible.
This is huge.
Yeah.
Well, because people like to click on regular text links. Plus, it also makes it for a faster download. Plus, it also makes it accessible to disabled folks out there. There's a lot of people that use the internet that maybe are visually and hearing impaired.
So, Rob, lay it on us. What's the horrible site of the week?
This site is reallifecoach.com.
Why is that so bad?
Well, the actual domain name isn't that bad. It's just that when you go to the site, you kind of get a little dizzy.
Okay, why don't you describe it for those that aren't at reallifecoach.com right now?
Well, it's got a few issues. I mean, the site has a good purpose for the internet. It's to offer information on how to live a better life. And, you know, it's like coaching tips and books that they're trying to sell off of the site. But the issue that I have with the site is that it has too many font sizes.
That's a no-no.
Too many different colors of links.
That's bad.
And it's just a garble of text. Now, text is good. People like to a certain extent, read text, but they don't like to read text that's sized all over the place using different fonts. Your eye just gets lost on here.
I'm looking at it now. It's all bolded. Everything is bolded. Well, you only use bolding judiciously.
Yeah, exactly.
To call attention.
And use only probably two different kinds of fonts on any website. Mm-hmm. And ideally, you want to use them all the same.
Yeah.
Because then that creates a consistent look and feel to the website. And you only want to use probably maybe two or three colors at the most. And those colors are used strategically to help draw the eye to a particular area on the site that you want them to go to.
Well, this website also is rather lengthy.
Yes, it is.
It's like all on one page or something.
It's 4 to 5 pages long.
Oh, yeah. If you print it out, it comes out to 4 or 5 pages.
And that's a lot of scrolling. And
no
that's,
kidding.
That's, you know, and it's okay to have some scrolling on your site, but the content needs to be consistent throughout the scroll. You know, I mean, a lot of new sites scroll down quite a few pages, but that's because you have to read through that, and it's all consistent and it's all flowing. But the site just jumps all over the place. So anyway, we just wanted to share one and go check it out.
Rob, there's some sites that will offer us some good tips on good site design. And one of them I wanted to share is Bobby.
Bobby, give us some good site tips.
Now, Bobby is actually a page or a little application you can run off of cast.org. That's C-A-S-T, which stands for Center for Applied Special Technology. So you go to cast.org/Bobby. And what you'll get is a website that will help you repair significant barriers to access to your site by individuals with disabilities.
It offers an analysis using the U.S. federal government's Section 508 guidelines, which specifies how to set up your website to be accessible by disabled folks out there. And that's an important thing, and a lot of people forget about accessibility when it comes to websites, and the use of text links is very important in that.
And if you want a site that doesn't suck, you're going to have to check out another site called fixingyourwebsite.com. And really, that site name says it all, Rob.
Yeah, it does.
It's by the author of the book, Web Pages That Suck. So.
And then another one is Usable Web, which is a comprehensive collection of links and information architecture and bad design and usability information.
There is a ton of links there. I was fascinated by that. That one's on my desktop as a shortcut.
And Site Confidence is the other one. It's a site from the UK. It offers a performance service that tests the download speed of your website.
Finally, before we run out of time, and we are out of time, websitesthatsuck.com. That is terrific. They have the Daily Sucker. And Vincent Flanders, who runs that site, just does a terrific job. And like I mentioned earlier, he actually wrote the book, Web Pages That Suck, that's a bestseller.
And there's another site called worstoftheweb.com also. And every week, Buzz, Melvin, and Chip offer horrible sites that have been peppered with their own comments. We hope you found all this information fun and insightful. And if you have a favorite website or one that you saw that is really bad, send it to us or drop us an email at rob@webtalkguys.com.
Do that. Okay, Rob, let's go straight to the expert horse's mouth.
Yeah.
We've lined up a conversation with Steve Krug. He's a usability consultant and the author of best-selling Don't Make Me Think, Common Sense Approach to Web Usability.
After the break, Steve is going to offer some great tips on how to build a better website, so don't miss him. You're tuned to Web Talk Guys Radio. Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Guys Radio. I have a tip for you that will cut your inbox spam down to zero, guaranteed. The solution is a very powerful software plugin I've come across called MailWiper, and it cleaned my inbox of all my hundreds of unwanted emails I get every day, and continues to do so every day, 7 days a week. MailWiper currently works with Outlook and Outlook Express from Microsoft and supports multiple email accounts. Definitely stop deleting your emails and wearing out your finger. Do your part to fight spam. MailWiper can be downloaded and installed in seconds and set up within a half an hour. There are no monthly or annual fees ever. Get your life back. I certainly did. Go to MailWiper.com now and save over 40% off the regular $49.95 price. You actually can get the software for $29.95 if you order it right off of the website at MailWiper.com. MailWiper comes with a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee and free technical support. So go to MailWiper.com and get those savings, and it's only $29.95.
Dude, check it out. Listen to Web Talk, totally for sure. Your old man's not here.
And I gotta tell you, fellas, you have got what appears to be a dynamite sound.
You're back and connected to the Web Talk Guys radio show. My name is Rob Greenlee, and joined by web girl Dana.
Hi, Rob.
And thank you for listening. You've been around the web and the internet a little bit, so you're familiar with websites. And if you're like me, you probably bumped into a few where you came away fairly confused, basically about how to navigate the site and what they're all about.
Yeah, I've seen a few sites, Rob, that are so 1990s. I mean, that was so last millennium.
Yeah,
right?
There's a lot of sites that need help.
And I think some sites do need a good dose of basic principles of just simplified web design. I want them to think about me as a user and as a visitor, but not just what they want to see.
That's right.
Some things that really bug me, I think my pet peeves are too much text and all those huge images and, of course, pop-ups. And I have a personal one about welcome to my website, that kind of greeting that you get. So I know they're my pet peeves, but I know what I don't like. But I think we need someone to tell us what is useful to everyone.
We all can't be experts, yeah. And WebGirl and I certainly aren't experts necessarily, even though we have built a few of our own sites and built some sites for other people. Even though we have that background, we felt that it would be great to invite an expert on the show to give us some pointers on how to build a better website. And joining the Web Talk guys today is Steve Krug, who is a usability consultant, and he basically solves fundamental web design problems. And Steve has worked for companies like Apple, Barnes & Noble, and Netscape, working with them to improve their online website presence. He is a consultant in a firm called Advanced Common Sense at www.sensible.com, S-E-N-S-I-B-L-E.com, and is based in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, and he has recently written down all of his advice in a book. And the name of the book is Don't Make Me Think, A Common Sense Approach to Web Usability. Steve, thanks for joining us on the show.
Oh, thank you, Rob.
Fantastic. Why don't you tell us a little bit about web usability design? Why don't you define that for us so we kind of have an idea of as a starting point here?
Well, I've done usability for a long time, and usability just means making whatever it is you're working on easier to use for whoever's going to end up using it. So in the last 5 years, I've been mostly doing web usability, which means fine-tuning websites so that people can make their way through them with a minimum of effort and thought and get what they want to do done. It's an element of design. It's kind of like an add-on to design. The aspect of design that focuses on actually making sure that it can be used when it's done, as opposed to the elements of design
sure.
that make it look good or make it appealing.
In your book, you mentioned that to do an effective design of web pages, you have to really learn three main things, and I guess they're, what, three facts of real-world web use. Can you run down those for us?
Yeah, well, I kind of, in writing the book, I came to a lot of conclusions that I hadn't really thought about in the act of writing the book.
Well, it certainly keeps it simple. I mean,
yeah.
if you can focus on accomplishing these three things, you're probably going to be okay, right?
Right.
Okay.
It finally dawned on me that one of the big problems was that there was this big gap between the way designers think, designers and marketing people and everybody who's responsible for putting a site together, the way they think people are going to end up using the site as opposed to the way people actually do use the web.
Yeah, sometimes there's a disconnect, right?
Yeah. Sometimes more than others. We tend to think that people are using it in a fairly orderly fashion. That fits with our wish that things are pretty orderly and our distorted sense that our own use of it is fairly orderly. But if you ever sit down and watch people use the web, which is part of what usability people do, mm-hmm. they watch people use things. And if you watch them, the three things that I kind of boiled it down to were that people are basically not reading, but actually people just kind of blow through them on their way to finding something to read. So they're trying to get to whatever the information is that they're really interested in, but most of the pages on the site are just kind of ways for them to burrow their way down to that information. They will read at some point, but along the way they're really just scanning and just looking for words that jump out at them. So the second one is about how they make choices. At first we think they're reading the whole page to begin with, so then they're going to stop and assess all the options that we've offered them on this page and make a choice based on their interest. The fact is, it's more like people find the first thing that even vaguely resembles what they're looking for, and then they click on it. I mean, that's the nature of the web, is you find things, and you click on them, and they take you closer to what you're looking for. So people don't really make careful choices. They kind of take the first thing that seems like a reasonable choice and follow it. And if it doesn't work out, they click on the back button and go back and try again.
It certainly seems like most people, when they go to a website, are going there for a particular reason. And they're probably looking for something in particular. And you know, but granted, if there's a site that really doesn't have a focus like that, that could probably be an issue.
Right. And it sort of breaks into two parts. One is people who go there for, as you say, for a reason, and they know what they're looking for. And then there's the other side of it, which is you go there, and you're not exactly sure what you're looking for. You're not necessarily even sure what words the sites are going to use to describe what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of different behaviors, and your site kind of has to support both of them. So it is important to know what people are likely to be trying to do when they get to your site. And then the third one was that when we're designing stuff, we think people are going to actually figure out how it works. That they're going to appreciate how we've organized it and how it works.
Wishful thinking again, right?
Again, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you have to have wishful thinking when you're designing to get you through.
Yeah.
If you didn't have that kind of wishful thinking, you couldn't possibly put in the kind of effort that it takes to build one of these things. And when you watch people use stuff, you realize right away that they're kind of teetering on the brink of disaster most of the time, that they have no idea how this thing that they're using actually works. And they don't care. All they want is to successfully get to the stuff that they're using. And if they get there without having any understanding of how the thing works, that's fine with them.
So is there a strong correlation between them not wanting to figure things out and the fact that they don't read the pages?
Yeah, they do go hand in hand. They both come out of the fact that they're kind of goal-oriented, for the most part. I mean, there are sites where the objective is to go there and read, you know, like Salon. What's important is the words and that they're carefully written.
With a product site, the person is looking for a particular product, but you know, just like we were just saying, a content site, they're actually going there to get information. Is there a kind of a different usability going on there?
You've always got to take it specific to the site. If you're working on a site, you really want to figure out what this site is going to offer, what kinds of people are going to be coming here, and more importantly, what are they going to have in mind when they get here? So it doesn't even necessarily break between content and product. It's really very idiosyncratic.
Steve, one of the things I've learned through the years of making some sites, and I could be completely wrong on this, but is that you boil down the front or home page, the main page, to just a couple of choices if possible. And that a couple of the main reasons that a person might want to go to that site and let them launch off in one direction or the other. So let's just start looking at the home page, because that's the first impression most people have of a website.
Okay.
I understand it depends on if it's a product or a content site, but can you give us just some general, across-the-board guidelines of what you should have on that homepage and the best way to present it?
Sure, yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you. I ended up, it was like the longest chapter. It's like a third of the book is a chapter about homepages.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't get it right from the beginning, if people get off on the wrong foot, forget it. The likelihood that they're going to then stumble off in increasingly wrong directions and not recover or just think that the site isn't any good is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth spending a ton of time on getting the homepage right. Because the homepage gets so much traffic, because by definition the homepage is, on almost every site, it's going to get more traffic by a factor of 10 than any other page in the site.
Mm-hmm.
All the stakeholders in the site, all the marketing people and everybody, has a strong interest in getting their content to be visible on the homepage.
Yeah.
And over time it kind of deteriorates the homepage. And so what happens is what gets squeezed out as a result is, for people to be able to come to the homepage and right away have a concept of what this site is, what it's about, what they have to offer, just the main point. What kind of site is this? Is this a site where I can actually buy this stuff, or is this a site where I just learn about this stuff? Instead, you end up with a lot of things that are intended to entice people to go further into the site, which may or may not work, and they belong there. I mean, mm-hmm. if you want to divide the homepage between things that entice and demonstrate the range of your, you know, the range of what you have, the same as like a magazine cover, you know, you have little blurbs for all the stories down the side. Sure. But you also need to devote enough space and enough navigation to give people a clear idea of where they are and who it is that's talking to them and how credible they are. But the main one is really, what is this? I mean, a lot of times people ask you to test a website, and you'll sit some people down in front of it. They'll look at it, and they'll say, you know, I don't really know what they do. I don't know what this is. And it's like, and the people from the client who are sitting there, just like they slap their heads and say, oh, geez, you know, you're right. It's true. It doesn't say what we do. Because they know, you know,
sure.
they say what they do.
We're having a conversation with Steve Krug, who is a web usability consultant. And we're going to get more tips about how to build a better website. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Web Tech Guys Radio Show. My name is Rob Greenlee. I got Web Girl Dana in here. We're going to continue our conversation with Steve Krug, who is a web usability consultant. And Steve's going to help us solve some fundamental web design problems. Let's talk about the contrast between text-based sites and sites that use a lot of images, and what kind of the advantages of going one way or the other, or is there a happy medium there?
Yeah, I think happy medium is the key phrase. I mean, it's done a lot of work with Roger Black, who's a designer, and he had some phrase, I can't remember, it was something like the beauty to download ratio.
Uh-huh.
I should look it up and find out, because he deserves credit for it. I have nothing against web pages being very attractive, but the graphics should serve the interests of the site and the user as much as the words do.
Sure.
And, you know, people kind of go overboard in thinking, well, it's got to be really good looking, you know? And the fact is, it's possible to do sites that are very good looking and very crisp and professional and attractive that are not, like, full of graphics. I mean, not like graphic touches actually tend to have much more impact
mm-hmm.
than what I call big honking graphics.
You know, mm-hmm. People do have a tendency, at least in my experience anyway, to take more action off of text, though. You know, at least
what people are doing is people are acting on the text. The one thing that eye tracking research has actually shown is what graphics do is they attract your eye to a location, and you then read the text that's next to the graphic.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So they actually, if you have your lead story, you have a small picture next to it that's an image from the lead story. People's eyes are going to tend to go first to that graphic, but then right after they go to that graphic, they're going to start parsing the words that are next to it to figure out what that, you know, interpret that graphic and find out.
Interesting, yeah. Let's also talk a little bit about site navigation. What are some of the tips that you have to put together good navigation within a site? I know that's very important, and that's
yeah,
what
yeah,
users
that was like
get.
That was the second longest chapter. That was probably yeah. another 20% of the book was navigation. You know, you're trying to guide people to what you've got. So
mm-hmm.
navigation, it does two things. It helps them obviously get to what you've got. But the other thing it does that nobody ever talks about is it reveals what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have navigation there, it's kind of like a table of contents. You know, it's fairly concisely telling people what they're going to be able to find here. So that's an important function. And then the other function of it is to let people know where they are, let them know where they've gotten to,
mm-hmm.
Which, since there's nothing physical about it, if they will, oh, yeah, that was over here to the left a little, you know, it's not what it's like. That was a few clicks back, but there's no real sense of direction.
When you say where you are within the site, what are you really meaning from a design standpoint?
There's actually one kind of more or less a design rule for me, which is that each page should have a name, and that the name of the page should be fairly prominent at the top of the page.
Okay.
So if I click on a button that says, interior design, then when I get to the page that it takes me to, the words interior design should appear somewhere at the top of the page in, you know, either by combination of position and size and boldness and the distinction from the rest of the text on the page that makes it clear that this is the title of this whole page. There's something very important, actually, about that. It's like what you click is what you get. That I click on these words, and those same words show up at the top of the page, so it confirms that action. That, okay, I thought I was going to get here. Okay, this is where I got to. So now I know that this whole page is about interior design.
Well, and another good reason is people don't always go forward. They sometimes hit that back button a number of times to, like, where was that page I saw once again?
Well, exactly. Yeah. And then you get back to one of those pages, you have to spend time figuring out what page this is. Yeah.
Well, is there any advantage of keeping your site not very deep? I mean, fairly shallow, like maybe one click off of the page, which would make more navigational links if you have an extensive site. But
right. It's, again, you know, it's all trade-offs. The one thing that I could say about that with some conviction is that a lot of times people will say, oh, everything should be only one or two clicks away from the homepage, right? That we want to minimize the number of clicks that it takes to get something. But in fact, if you watch people, they don't mind clicking a lot of times to get to what they want, as long as each time they click, they are fairly confident that this click is taking them closer to what they wanted to get to, so that the clicks are kind of unambiguous. And the links are well named, and the organization is clear. That's much more important than whether you can get through it in one or two clicks. Because if you've got a lot of stuff, then if you only have a little bit of stuff, then yeah, you can keep it shallow, and you can have links to everything on the homepage. But most sites have a lot of stuff, and so you have to figure out a hierarchy that makes sense, so that people can know with confidence that okay, the thing that I'm looking for is probably under this category, and then they click on that. And they get to a page where the page name is what they just clicked on, and they see another list, and they can immediately identify what the right thing to click on is in that.
Sure.
Steve, now you talked about earlier, part of your job as a usability expert is to watch people use a website.
Yeah.
Which should be fun.
It's great fun.
And take
it's
notes.
It's a great job.
I can imagine it must make the person you're watching just a little nervous trying to...
Oh, no. You just, I mean, it's important to put them at ease, but once you, in the beginning, just by making sure that they understand that they can't make any mistakes, that everything they do is going to be fine.
And it's very important to have them see what maybe we think of as a mistake. But,
exactly. So you have to let them know that the mistakes are, in fact, what's going to help you and that you really consider them very valuable. So it's not
sure.
And then people are very comfortable.
You did suggest on your site, I believe, a way that a person that's maybe designing a website for their work or whatever can maybe shortcut, sorry to say, hiring a usability expert and maybe conduct their own sort of...
Neighbor testing.
Neighbor testing. Tell us your advice on the neighbor testing.
Well, I do a lot of neighbor testing. I'm actually kind of heretical in that usually if you're doing usability testing, you're supposed to be recruiting people to test it who are like the people, like your audience, who are like the people who are going to end up using your site.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel, over the years, I've kind of grown to feel like it doesn't much matter. As long as the person has some experience using a web browser and speaks the same language that you do, then you're probably okay. Because the problems that you're looking for are the grossest problems. You're looking for the problems. The first thing you want to find is the problems that anybody's going to run into, no matter who they are. And then, and that's why it's an iterative process, because then you fix those problems, and then you go back and test again.
Sure.
So, and I'm not saying there isn't any value in having in doing it with people who are like your audience, because there's audience-specific knowledge and domain knowledge and stuff that's important that you learn from by watching somebody who is like your audience use it. But you can also learn a lot just by having anybody look at it. So I just, so my neighbors, hey, you got an hour, want to make some money?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
You know, serve pizza. Invite people over, have a little pizza party.
I think on the site it says bring a six pack.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's fun. It actually is fun. I mean, it's fun to watch people use those. It's also fun for the people who are doing it.
Sure.
Because the way you do it is you basically get them to think out loud while they're using it. And it's interesting for them, to talk about it. And then at the end, you can kind of compare notes with them. You can't while they're doing it, because you don't want to muddle up. You don't want to give them too much information while they're doing it.
Steve, I have my own particular pet peeve, I think, or one or two of them, I guess, when I go to websites. And one of them is that sort of So last year, kind of, welcome to my website, the House of Pancake Syrups. And, you know, welcome to my website. It's a little bit too informal. And yet I don't know if we need to necessarily say goodbye to that community feel of going to a storefront or whatever it happens to be. Do you have any pet peeves that, you know, right off the top that you would actually like to see people, you know, if you could be god of the web world?
And just totally eliminate, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I do get annoyed with sites break the back button. So if I'm clicking along and I click on a link that takes me to somebody else's site, and then I click down within that site a couple of times, and then I want to go back to where I was, and I click the back button three times, and what it does is it keeps reloading the homepage of the second site.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've been seeing that a lot more lately.
Yeah, yeah. And I find that, personally, I find that very irritating, although now I finally... See, this kind of goes with the muddling through. I mean, I basically just muddled through. I believe everybody muddles through, no matter what level of competence or experience they're at. And I would just muddle through, and eventually I figured out that actually when that happens, usually if you click twice fast, so what's happening is it's reloading that home page, okay, automatically. But if you click twice fast, you can fool it.
There you go.
So that's how I muddle through these days.
First-hand experience, I know, you can tell.
Oh, my other pet peeve, actually I do have another pet peeve, which is a big one, which is, when you're reading through a message board or a discussion board, and so you want to browse through a whole bunch of messages, you just want to keep clicking next message. Uh-huh. And sometimes they're set up so that the next button actually requires you to scroll down the page to get to the next button.
Oh, yes.
You know, that makes me crazy.
Yes, I'm a big fan of going to E! Online, and they always have the worst dressed people of the celebrities of the week. And
uh-huh.
Big picture, and you always have to scroll to the bottom to see the next one. And it's a pain. I hate that.
Especially because it is avoidable. You know, it's like a lot of things there are not avoidable, and you can see where they made the trade-off that they made, but they didn't try it themselves.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Steve Krug. He's a web usability consultant. And he's telling us how to design websites. Hi, this is Web Girl Dana of Web Talk Guys Radio. Now, I have a tip for you out there if you get a lot of spam in your inbox, and I can tell you how to get it down to zero, guaranteed. So my solution is the very powerful software plugin called Mail Wiper, and it cleaned my inbox of all of those hundreds of unwanted emails that I get every day, and it does it 24/7. Mail Wiper currently works with Outlook and Outlook Express from Microsoft, and it supports multiple email accounts. So just stop hitting the delete button. Do your part to fight spam. Mail Wiper can be downloaded and installed in just a few seconds and set up within a half an hour. There are no monthly or annual fees either, and you can get your life back. I know I did, and I'm very happy, and so is my husband. So go to mailwiper.com right now, and you can save over 40% off the regular $49.95 price, because you can get Mail Wiper now for $29.95, and you can go to mailwiper.com and get it right there. Mail Wiper comes with a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee, and you know what? It has free technical support. That's amazing. So save over 40% off the $49.95 price and get Mail Wiper now for $29.95 at mailwiper.com.
You web guys rock!
Gather round, webheads. Listen and learn.
Welcome back to the Website Guys Radio Show. My name is Rob Greenlee. Got Web Girl Dana in here. Hey, we're going to continue our conversation with Steve Krug, who is a web usability consultant, and Steve's going to help us solve some fundamental web design problems. Well, now, one question that I've had, and I've built sites through the years myself, and I've wrestled with the concept of building navigation on the left side of the screen or the right-hand side of the screen. There seems to be some advantages to have it on the right side of the screen because most people have their little mouse cursor usually on the scroll bar on the side there. But it seems like most sites put the navigation on the left side because it's more of a left to right medium. Is that like a spillover from the print medium or which way?
I think it has to do with the fact that we perceive things, we try to interpret things through visual hierarchies. Mm-hmm. So for the same reason that we expect the name of the page heading, to be at the top of the page.
Okay.
We kind of expect, because it's at a higher level than the paragraph that, you know, of text, right? The heading is at a higher hierarchical level than the text, because the text is superior to it. Same way with the navigation. The navigation, I think, goes at the top or the left because it's at a higher logical level than the individual content for this particular page.
Okay.
It's not hard for people to adapt to the idea that navigation is over on the right, but the left is kind of is conventional now. And for the most part, if you don't have a good reason to buck a convention, it's usually not worth it. Because the convention buys you a lot. The convention means if you follow the convention, then you don't have to worry about whether people are going to get that part of your design or not.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but on the other hand, if you have like design reasons or whatever for putting it over on the right, then you can do it. You can make it work, but you're going to have to test it to make sure that you've got it. What you have to test is to make sure that people look at the page and say, "Oh, okay, navigation's over there." That's the reaction you want, as opposed to, "Is that the navigation?" Yeah, I guess.
When I built our current site, the WebTalkGuys.com site, I kind of wrestled with that whole decision of navigation on left or right, and I just decided to put it up at the top right below our logo on the front page.
Uh-huh. It's conventional.
Yeah, and the main reason I did that was to give more space in the lower part of the page for the content piece.
Well, exactly. Yeah, and you don't have that many sections that you have to deal with, so they will fit horizontally.
Sure.
You get into that trade-off. If you have a ton of sections that you kind of need to expose, then maybe you do have to put it down the left because they won't fit.
Yeah, let me ask you a couple more elements of when we decide on what we put on a website. Something that was very popular, I guess it still is a little bit now, is big flash movies at the beginning of sites.
Oh, yeah.
We had one. We finally did away with it because it was kind of a barrier to entry. But what is your opinion on any non-straight HTML elements like Java or streaming audio or video or... of course, the flash.
Movie. Right. Well, it's kind of, again, it's kind of the beauty to download ratio. I mean, are they pulling their weight, factoring into that is how much are they annoying some people?
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, nobody does any of them anymore without a skip intro button.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's at least a step in the right direction. If I was a designer who would design flash for a living, then I certainly would want my site to start with a flash intro. On the other end of the scale is, like a library site or something.
It just doesn't fit.
No reason for it. So everybody falls somewhere on that continuum.
Mm-hmm.
I think you really have to know your audience. You have to know whether they're going to get anything out of it. I would have to say most of the ones that I see, 50% of them are probably inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what you do about that.
We've talked about on the show using Flash as a piece of a website, not a complete solution. And it seems like there are quite a few sites that are starting to think about Flash in that way. And I think it's a positive thing.
I certainly would go along with that. I don't think the home page is necessarily the best place for Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Flash is great. I mean, you've got animation and kind of lightweight graphics and sound and synchronized audio, and so there are a lot of great things you can use it for. But given that it's a pretty big download and there really aren't that many people on broadband yet, I think you want it to be kind of an opt-in thing. So it could be one level down, and you could prominently tease me to it on the homepage. If you've got the Flash. But it should be my choice.
With the future of broadband really on the horizon, probably over the next 5 years or so, how do you see the internet page designs or the web page designs evolving when it really starts hitting a critical mass of users that have high speed connections?
I'm probably a Luddite at heart. I think I don't necessarily believe in high tech solutions as solutions. My guess is that when everybody's got broadband, there'll be a lot more bad broadband stuff published. Same way as with desktop publishing hit, it's like there was a lot of bad desktop publishing.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Exactly. Yeah. Just because you can doesn't mean there's a good reason to do it. It's like not. I did a lot of work actually with At Home, with the former site At Home. What I suspected going in, and some of the people I was working with suspected going in, which I think proved to be true, was that for people who had broadband connections, for most of them, the fact that it was always on was actually more important than the fact that it was fast, beyond a certain point.
I mean, yeah, I would think so.
It certainly always helps that it's not slow. It's just having it always available and not having to dial up and all that stuff. So I don't know. I mean, my guess is that that some people will come up with some really good uses of broadband, and that they'll be really successful. And like right now, who's using the web really well? Amazon and eBay and the travel sites made really good use of the technology.
Yeah, and those sites don't really depend on any kind of fast internet connection to be used. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And certainly that was part of the thinking about WebTalk Guys, too, is I wanted to keep things rather light and more text-based.
Well, exactly. Which is perfect, especially considering that your whole point is you're getting people to use broadband, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And the contrast between like a Flash site and a site like Yahoo, I think, is a classic example. I mean, Yahoo, if you look at Yahoo's site, it hasn't changed much since 96.
Right.
When there wasn't much bandwidth out there.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is that it's so hard to create broadband content.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's
expensive.
The difference between making a short animated film and writing a couple of paragraphs is pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And words are pretty powerful if you use them well. I think anybody who's done any of their own video knows that it's not going to be that easy to fill all these broadband sites.
Steve, I just want to remind everybody, you did write a book. We talked about it at the beginning of the show. It's Don't Make Me Think, Common Sense Approach to Web Usability. And, you know, it's amazing that Amazon ranks it in their top 200 books. And it came out in 2000, right?
Yeah, it came out
October
2000. So it's been out over a year.
Over a year. And it's way up there. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Any interesting feedback from that? I noticed that Netscape employees were classified at Amazon as being a very popular group that bought your book.
Yeah, there was actually...
Why is that?
It was very puzzling at first when it got its first group. First kind of location where it was popular, it was some town in Iowa. And a bunch of people wrote to me and said, you know, why is this so popular? It turned out there's actually this very large usability consulting company that's in this town of Iowa. But it's been great. I actually get tons of kind of interesting and very pleasant email.
Well, Steve, thanks for joining us on the show.
Well, thanks for asking me. It's
been
fun.
We've been having a conversation with Steve Krug, a web usability consultant, and he's been giving us some great tips on how to build a terrific website.
Hey, continued success, Steve. Be sure to check out Advanced Common Sense. That's his consulting company. And you can find it at www.sensible.com. Sensible, S-E-N-S-I-B-L-E. And also there, you can buy his book. It's the best book we've ever seen on web usability. It's called Don't Make Me Think, Common Sense Approach to Web Usability. And you know it's ranked at Amazon.com in the top 200 books. It's very popular. You're listening to the Web Talk Guys.
Hey, my name is Rob Greenlee, and we hope to have you back with us again next week. I'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.